these slides and just talk in general about some of the thinking behind why we do one-day, one-off events and how to think about them strategically and their strategic value in developing a pattern of ministry in a local church. And hopefully in the process, we'll be throwing out lots of ideas of the kind of events that you could possibly build in, as well as some of the work that needs to be done around them and some of the knock-on benefits of doing them as well. Okay, One Day Wonders. Why? Okay, it's this classic thing that you have a group of kids that you meet with Sunday by Sunday, just on the inside of your church building, and just the acknowledgement that these children and their families have a wide web of connections with other families, other children at school, and so on. Now, obviously, your hope is that families and children will be drawn into your week-by-week Sunday worship and become part of the scene there, the parents being evangelized in the main adult church meetings, if you do it that way, and the children learning about Christ in the small groups. But I think the pattern over the last 20 years has been that the way people live means that the kind of places you're looking for contact with people are more and more outside that traditional Sunday morning slot, whether that's midweek, after school, whatever. Even with some parents and families. So there are lots of families who hang around in Wimbledon who are simply never there at weekends because they're posh gits and they have houses on the coast and they go down and sail every weekend. There are other things that they're involved in as well as sport. So, you know, we can't, you know, while you might have the leverage to talk to people who are committed Christians and to say to them, well, have you thought about, you know, committing yourself to coming to church Sunday morning, and that means saying no to all the rest of it. If you're involved in evangelism, that's not part of the deal, is it? You've got to go where they are rather than where you'd like them to be. So running a one-off event presents a significant evangelistic opportunity for reaching outwards from the context of your usual Sunday-based or perhaps even weekday teaching clubs. And that's principally the reason you do them, I think. I have run one-off events which have really been internal things for youth groups, where I've done kind of conference study days for the youth group and so on. Largely that the aim is evangelistic. Okay. Easiest to do for children. Because they're around and about, you can create all kinds of ideas for them. But for parents, you can produce a fantastic range of things for them to be involved with their kids. So even the council, you see, Kingston Council, local to me, now organises a family education and activity month. They recognise not only the need for laying on things that parents and children can do together, and also the desire that parents have to do so. So they run craft days for parents and children to come along and, you know, throw clay at each other or try and make something, or come along and get involved as a family in something active. So even the secular world's catching up with what really ought to be happening, or what the needs of parents are, and the desire for them to have things that they can do together as a family. And of course, that represents a fabulous opportunity. We also do sort of specialist things for adults, you know, men's breakfasts, those kind of things. And I'm not going to say that because we're running out of time. Okay, what exactly can you do for them? What kind of shape do these things take? Well, the first thing to say is that you can, if you're not doing this kind of thing already, then you can start really small. So we started off with our with the Sunday school I ran, I'm involved with, 7 years ago. We said Saturday before Christmas, I think Christmas was on a Thursday or something, we knew everyone would be frenetic, we simply ran a creche for them and said, time to do 2 hours Christmas shopping, drop your kids off, come back and have a mince pie and a cup of tea at the end. And it was just a creche. And we sang a few songs, we did a few, it was unstructured, that was the whole aim. But we had loads of kids, so we thought, hang on, we can do a bit more with this. Went on from there. It was just a small thing, it was 2 hours. You can do things that last for a whole morning or a whole afternoon, or you can do things that, 2 hours, you do things that last half a day, you know. You can do things that last the whole day. Tamar, of the many things that you run, how many of these events would you say you ran every year at your place? Yeah.
We would tend to do a whole day family event. This is in addition to what's already attached. And we would, probably two whole day family events, two half day.
Yeah. And then other things that are related to specific clubs. Yeah. Right, okay. We'll quiz you a bit on that later on. And of course, evening events, which work better for some things, as well as whole family events. So when do you do them? Well, some of the obvious times, actually. Our creche turned into what became Christmas fun, and we ran it with a strict sort of age range, sort of from four-year-olds up to eight-year-olds, and it became a three-hour thing instead of a two-hour creche. It became a three-hour structured activity, and as time has progressed and we've learnt how to do it, we've added stuff to it. This year we did a puppet show. We told the Christmas story in a puppet show at the start. And because kids love to see things twice, when the parents came at the end, we did the whole thing again. But parents sat with children. Prior to that, we did just singing. So I sang some songs with them, and then at the end we did something that we thought the parents would like, which might be a bit sort of liturgical and religious sounding for some of you who are Free Church people. But we took them into church, lit candles, and sang Away in a Manger for the parents. The parents adored it. The thing I want to try this next Christmas is to do a scratch nativity, which is basically they show up. We do other stuff with them. We don't spend the 3 hours rehearsing with them, but we'll basically do a nativity play for the parents when they come in at the end that is entirely unrehearsed. And much hilarity, I'm sure, will ensue as a result. Basically just slapping clothes on and pushing them on, and there'll be some sort of soundtrack that they're kind of miming to. That's the way you can sort of build these things, rather than, what puts us off starting them. And I think, I felt this with Tamar, who runs this huge range of things. I just thought, wow, where do you start? And I think the answer is always start something really small that you can cope with organisationally and within your own mind, and then just let it grow. Let it grow and see where it takes you. And, it's less daunting if you start small and let it grow. Is that fair to say, Tamar? Did you start small? I bet you just went in with all guns blazing, didn't you? Sorry, say, explain that.
I started too quickly, so I started too many new things at one go, which was great for a little while, but then you lose people because they can't keep up the momentum.
Yeah.
Then you have to think, okay, what do I cut out?
Yeah.
What are the essentials?
And that inevitably leads to disappointment
from
some people, doesn't it? You know, they think they failed. You created an expectation in a target group that you failed to be able to sustain.
So we're almost back up to now.
Where you started.
Yeah, but it's
taken a big... Listen, I never tire of saying to people, and many of you are very experienced, but good gospel work is, I think, nearly always long-term. In other words, you spend a long time in one area banging away at the same thing. Low-key, and one of the reasons for being low-key is that you simply cannot sustain the amount of effort it takes to run something that is very high-profile and high energy. It stops you being long-term. Long-term, low-key, and relational. It's about building relationships. And these kind of events are one way of doing that. So there's Christmas. Subsequently, we started Easter Fun once we got going with that. Again, it's for the littlies. Tamar runs probably very different kinds of Easter events, but it's an obvious place where we could simply replicate the model we had for Christmas and do it at Easter. And it's the same thing. It's 3 hours. We have ended with a very silly competition with boiled eggs in the church, rolling them down slides and seeing if they would crack, which the kids absolutely adored, but there was a kind of eggshell everywhere. And we're just trying to think towards the next one at Easter about how we do something with it which gives us an opportunity to share the Easter message with the parents at the end rather than just sweep up the eggshells. And take their children home to feed chocolate to them. Halloween's another time that a lot of people instinctively think they want to organise something, and that's very often an Easter event. Very often it's conceived as something you do as a kind of replacement event. How, Tamar, you do Halloween stuff?
Yeah.
And do you conceive of it as something, let's put something on so that they don't do this? So it's a day thing, not an evening thing?
Afternoon, evening.
So
the afternoon's for all ages and the evening's for older kids.
Okay. At summertime, kind of sporty things, when our beautiful weather clears up for a week and you can, prophetically know which week that's going to be, that the ground will be dry. But again... getting dads into sporting events, they love all that, and are more than happy to attempt to beat their children. But different kinds of summer sporty things. At its simplest, the summer thing is just like a family barbecue, isn't it? You know, you've got these contacts with kids, come to a barbecue. You know, it's people are up for it. Harvest works in certain kinds of areas where it's big. It's in my experience, it's kind of going out of fashion in towns a bit. But some of you might be countryfied. Any of you minister in a country? Or, and yeah, I mean, they love the old harvest there, don't they? and they still might turn out for stuff. You know, traditionally, a church would have a harvest supper every year. But it's pretty much going out of fashion. But... in favour of Halloween, actually, is the big sort of autumnal event before Christmas. But you might be able to fly something there. And then, of course, there are just kind of random things where it's not attached to anything in particular. You just organise something at an appropriate moment that kind of works. What are some of the kind of random events that you've organised, Tamar?
I don't know if it was in England or not, but
Yeah.
My church is one way, really easy way. Things like sports days. We've done like just family fun days, so turned the church into sort of a medieval fair, and there's lots of medieval games and crafts going on, and medieval banquet, and people just pop in and out for a few hours.
Yeah, so, you know, creative ideas, if you've got the sort of manpower and so on for them, can work at other times, not necessarily themed. But the key thing I want to say is that to think strategically about this, it's not, you know, the idea to say, let's just have a, you know, a one-day event. What you need to do is to sit down and really think about how what you're doing feeds into the whole structure of church life. So, for example, if your big push is to get people into, you know, Christianity Explored, say, at the beginning of September, or an Alpha course, or whatever your church runs, then and that's fixed in the diary, then just start with that starting point, work your way back for the parents of a kid that you've got in your Sunday school who aren't church members, or families who are sort of vaguely connected with the church and might come to things. How do I plan this so that I'm able to get them to a place where they might consider coming to the either an evangelistic talk or to join an evangelistic course, or some other way in? Otherwise, it becomes, you know, what's your outcome from the day? In other words, that's what I'm thinking about. What do you want? Of course, you want a great day where the kids have fun, where the parents see the God's community in action, where maybe they hear a Bible message, part of, or a full gospel presentation. But you need to think about, so what then? If the only thing you've got for them is Sunday morning church, that's fine. If that's the ask, if that's the aim, that's good. But there may be other things that are kind of easier routes in for people and more appropriate routes in for people. So work backwards from what you think your entry points as a congregation are, both for children and for parents, and put a plan together. So, you know, I'm starting to do joined up thinking like that with my Sunday school and with the next sort of age group up, the Explorers they're called in our church. We're planning together this pattern of what we do with our Sunday school. So we do Easter fun, Christmas fun. We do an outing for us to get to know the kids in the Sunday school and to invite their friends with no overt gospel input except to get to know us. And I now just started a parents' evening every year where they can talk to us about their kids, and I teach them about some parenting skills and say, don't look at my children, please, or you wouldn't be listening. The clear thing is to have a proper aim, and this is all about thinking strategically about what this event does, rather than just saying, wouldn't that be a good idea, let's do it. Your aim could be to present the gospel. Or you might think, actually, I want an event where I want to renew contacts. In other words, we've had people coming to church and they've moved off, or they don't come anymore. So, you know, let's get the records out and the database, and let's contact all of them and write a letter to them and say, come and join us for this special event. People drop out of church going for all kinds of reasons. Sometimes it's they're, you know, naffed off with the vicar. Other times it's just they've dropped out of it and they don't really know why, and they're actually just waiting for someone to phone them up, invite them to something in order to remind them and get back on it. You run some of these, Tamar, contact renewal?
Yeah, so we have two holiday clubs during the year, but then I guess same as a lot of churches, a lot of those children only matter how much we
You're fishing in a big pool, and you've got to keep your hook in. It might be to launch a new group. I mean, I haven't done anything like this. I had planned to, but I didn't. Just indolence on my part, I think. But we just rebranded our Sunday school. It's now called Movers and Shakers, would you believe? Mainly because I want to see Jonathan Fletcher, who's my minister, announce it from the front. He'll normally stand there going, oh, so Sunday school, yes, they'll go out this door. He'll hate having to say Movers and Shakers. You've done events to launch groups? Yeah.
We try to read the, like, when we split a club and start a new age.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. There is a danger with that, of course, that, you know, because you pour a lot of resources and energy and fun into a launch party, the club may not quite sort of live up to expectations afterwards in a normal run of events. So. Of course, to attract new children to regular groups, that's obvious. To deepen relationships, as I said, we basically do a farm, local sort of farm visit every year with the kids in our Sunday school, and we just chill out with them and you know, stroke rabbits and wash our hands 500 times. yes, and try not to lose any. And the last thing, I think this is really important, is we do it to encourage outreach for the parents. I see my job running my Sunday school, this is in the sense that I think, you know, when we talk about developing a Bible-centered youth work, how I think of myself in my Sunday school is I am the partner of the Christian parent in raising their child to know and love the Lord Jesus. So I want to do everything in reference to the parents. And one of the things that I want to encourage the parents in, and having been through the stage of having early young children, I know how difficult it is. So it's something I think I understand, is they have a fantastic opportunity to be gentle, invitational evangelists to other families. And it's an enormous opportunity. You don't need to, you know, wind them up and teach them two ways to live and tell them they have to sort of sit down and explain the gospel to their friends. You just have to encourage them to say, my daughter son goes to a great Sunday school. Would you like to bring your child along? Could Sarah, who's the friend of my Jesse, come along to it? And each of our children has brought along a non-Christian friend to their particular Sunday schools. It's often meant that we arrange sleepovers for Saturday night, so they come with us to church afterwards. So, you know, we're not trying to be underhand, but you know what that has led to has been the kids have enjoyed it. That we then started picking them up on Sunday morning as we've gone to church, and the parents have started coming to sort of soft church events, and sometimes even to proper church meetings where they hear a sermon and the gospel. But it is a massive opportunity that lots of parents don't pick up, not because they don't see the vision for it, it's just that they're kind of too busy and they don't see the mechanism of how it could happen. So I see that as one of my, potentially one of my roles with the parents of the children in my Sunday school, to encourage them in the natural point of contact outreach. So I'm asking them, you know, the parents of my children in Sunday school, what kind of event would your friends want their kids to come to? Because that's the kind of event we want to run. And of course, while you're there, you get an opportunity to connect with the parents. in a way that you often can't do Sunday morning, can you? Everybody's in a rush. You want to hand them the latest high-quality piece of artwork that your child has given them, or you know, if you're running a teenage group, the parents are sat outside in the car just waiting to pick them up. I mean, you know, we actually have precious little contact with the parents of the children in our groups. And it's partly because Sunday is terribly rushed. Okay, so having a name. And I just wanted to use this little diagram, which is stolen from, I think, Bill Hybels, but it's a helpful way of thinking, I think, to ask the question about who will be there at your meeting. So it envisages there are, was it five or six? Five different kinds of people you're thinking about. So the core people are your really keen, committed, active Christians who show up to anything. Your committed people are people who are committed to the church and committed to Jesus, but they will be people who, for whatever reason, are more passive, if you like, in their Christian involvement. That may be just the time of life thing. A lot of parents, when they've got 3, 4, and 5 year olds, are passengers for a very good reason. It's because they can barely keep their eyes open because they haven't had any sleep for 5 years. So the committed people, community is basically the church community, which would mean fringers, people who are there and are, you know, Christianized but perhaps not converted yet, people who are just visiting and looking in. And then outside that you have the crowd, which, how would you define the crowd, Tamar? An occasional thing to dip into. Stats show, don't they, that, you know, the numbers of people in church has remained largely constant. The people who are attached to churches remains constant. It's just that they're only there twice a year or five times a year. So that there is a huge hinterland of people out there who feel some connection to church and think it's a positive and a good thing. You know, I'm Church of England. I don't know quite why, but I am. And that means that I'm happy to show up or go to something occasionally, and particularly if I have children, you know, I'm happy to let them dip a toe in and try it. But they're just not there all the time. And, you know, they're most likely unconverted. And then finally, there's the culture. That's everyone else beyond, outside. Now, again, this is part of the planning. Who is going to be there at this event? Or rather, who am I targeting this event for? Is it just for the crowd? I might run, for example, a special kind of parents' evening where I know the people who are going to be coming are, you know, I invite them, they're the really keen Christians. And at this parents' evening, probably my aim will be to say, can I recruit you to be active prayers for the work we're doing? Because, you know, that's an aim that fits the people who are coming. For the wider people, for the wider group of parents, it might be something where I'm teaching them about parenting. If I was inviting, and with a very explicit Christian content, if I was inviting the community, the wider kind of church people, some of whom may not be converted. Again, I might do the same thing on parenting, but be a little more cautious in the way I talked about. I wouldn't make so many assumptions about where people were at. And similarly with the crowd and the culture. If, you know, if I'm running an evening for parents with them, then I'm not hiding the fact that I'm a Christian. I'm not hiding the fact that if I talk about parenting, it has a Christian basis, but I'm not quoting Bible verses every 3 minutes. I'm emphasizing the practicalities. So what they're hearing is, this guy knows something about to help me with my job of being a parent. Oh, and isn't that funny? It makes sense, and it's from the Bible. Isn't that interesting? And what I'm trying to do all the time, of course, is move people in that direction. I want the culture to become part of the crowd, occasionally sending their kids to things. I want the crowd people to become part of the church community. So they're dipping into church and listening and hearing stuff. I want the community people to be committed. And I want the committed people to be core, active Christians. In other words, what I'm aiming for is making disciples. And that's the direction that it all goes. But the way I conceive of an event and think about it and think about what is the content I want for it is determined by the kind of audience I'm attempting to reach. Does that make sense? Or is that simply ABC? And do you want to say anything more about that? Could you describe a couple of events, Tamar, where you've had sort of slightly different aims and tell us what you did at them? Why don't you come at the front?
When we put together, I put together sort of an overview for the year, you can have a look afterwards, which tries to cover what the preschool are doing outreach during the year, what the school's outreach during the year is, and the different clubs and the Sunday work. And that just sort of shows how some are across and some are focused on individual groups. And when I'm putting it together, I try and make sure that we've got events for each of those categories going on at some point during the year. As I say, some will overlap and some will be 4 or 5 and some will be specific. So things like culture, one really easy thing that I think pretty much any church could run, I think you could run it with 2 or 3 people, is something called what we call Kids Live. And we just ask local primary schools to send along a choir or a music group or a dance group or some, drama we've had. And so they organise it. And because a lot of them have got pokey little school halls, they love the fact maybe your church is slightly bigger. And we put on a celebration of that in an evening. And so you only need someone maybe on PA, someone presenting. And we just give out drinks to the parents as they come in and party bags to the kids as they go out. And I tend to compare it. And then just chat through the different acts, try and arrange them in a way that allows me to just chat. So rather than a straight talk, just a very sort of simple talk, but done in stages through, which is advertised for parents. But we get about 400 to that event. And in a largely Asian area, it's fantastic to see the church full of Muslims. So that would be something I'd class as a culture event. Something else would be something like, I said before, about a medieval or a Wild West Day, something like that. Maybe no talk whatsoever, but just ones where you are trying to get the community in. Sort of crowd events for those who we don't see the rest of the year, maybe only at Holiday Club. We do things like, as I said before, treasure hunts, tournaments, in the activity days and in Holiday Clubs, actually. We always have at least a coffee time for the last 20 minutes. Fresh coffee and cake, and that's become sort of built into parent psyche now, so they all turn up for that. But then when we do activity days at Christmas or Easter, we'll do a little show with that as well. But even if it's just coffee and cake, that's really simple. Sort of community ones, so those who are seeing maybe in midweek clubs but are in church, a lot of my events rotate around food. I don't get this size enough yet. So we have coffee time throughout our clubs, run by parents, church parents, whose kids are already in the club. So they're talking to their kids' friends' parents as they're in there. We make sure that every midweek club has an evangelistic event a term, say pancake parties or bonfire night events, talent show with a meal, whatever. I guess a committed one, work on things like all age services, with meals or picnics or barbecues afterwards. And then, like Tim, we do a family team parents forum once a term, which is sort of pitched really at the core and the committed. So we all have tea together, and then we get grandparents and other people from the church to look after the kids, whilst we, as team from the midweek and Sunday clubs, meet with the parents of the kids and always have, yeah, I don't do parenting as such stuff with them because I don't feel I can. But we look at different things. So last time we did how to engage kids with culture, how to put on gospel goggles and apply the Bible in everyday life. So we always do that. So that's sort of the different ways we work, and those things would thread in through the calendar through the year.
Listen, feel free to pitch in at any time, because I'm sure, you know, Tamar and I are just describing what we do, and you know, it might be, you know, if you is there anybody done a kind of one-off event that fits any of these categories? It's about sharing, you know, ideas. Yes.
And everyone brought like their wedding dresses. It was all planned before, but there's kind of old ones from the Victorian era.
Wow.
And the young teenagers were modelling them, and then there was a little bit said about each wedding dress. And quite ironically, like, even the kind of people who were on the fringe of quite the young people's group all came because they wanted to wear all the girls came
to wear the mum's wedding dresses. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, but I mean, we, you know, two really important things there. First of all, don't be frightened of joining in things that the rest of the community is involved in. You know, sometimes we get very kind of, oh, we're the church, we do our own thing, and often we put on things that are far more brilliant than, you know, the council or the world can organise. But if there's something to join in with, then you know, it's a fantastic opportunity to be seen to be out there and part of your local community. And if you can take the initiative to organise something that the rest of the community can be involved in, you know, it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be the centre of it, but, you know, you could come up with the idea for your village of having a, you know, a Victorian day and promote it as an idea. And that gets you great standing and brilliant visibility with the local community. Second thing is, don't be frightened of not having explicit gospel content in things. So we at our church, we work on a sort of three level kind of things. Level one event is about meeting the people and crossing the threshold, and not being frightened of being with Christian people at a church event in a church building. And the most that might happen at a level one event is that someone says grace before the food. And that's, you know, if you like, the only overt Christian content. Now, some churches, the tradition, some churches would be horrified that, what, you know, no one's going to give a call to the front and, you know, have the baptistry open. Terrified of doing stuff like that. But we need to recognise that people are a very long way away. A lot of people are a very long way away. And the kind of cultural era of evangelism where our culture knew the elements of the gospel and simply needed a sermon that challenged them about responding to Jesus, are largely gone. That can still happen to a certain subgroup, but when you're doing stuff for the wider culture, you need level one events that just get them interacting with the church. Level two is something that which is about raising questions and intrigue. So a quiz night, for example, that we put on, that I put on, which started when I was running the youth work, actually. And the idea there was that the teams that I announced, the teams that do best, will be the ones that have three or more generations in them. So teenagers, parents, grandparents. And it's a brilliant way of integrating the church community. And the response I had from people who came to it, non-Christians who came to it, was just astonished. They had never, ever seen a room filled with teenagers and children and parents and grandparents, an event like that. Because, you know, our culture chops people up into different kind of age segments, doesn't it? And I gave a short talk about, you know, ran the quiz. I gave a short talk about the big questions of life and said, you know, that's what our church is here for answering these big questions of life. And we think we found where the answer is, and we found it by looking at this incredible man, Jesus. Why don't you join us in looking at the Bible's answers to those things Sunday, or join some other group? That was it. Level three event is, you know, the big gospel bash. You get a full explanation of the gospel and an invitation to respond. But don't be frightened. Actually, if you're thinking of, you know, the numbers involved, and you're thinking that you need a funnel, you need to run far more level one events, fewer two events, and then, you know, even fewer three events. But hopefully three events are happening every Sunday in your church. The word of God's opened, and people are being invited, encouraged to respond. So here's the question: how do I move people further in? And the answer is by the word of God explained and lived. So the lived part is about exposing outsiders to Christ's community, for them to see the difference Jesus makes in our lives, but also in that context, explaining, teaching the Bible, God's word. Okay, I'm going to go on to some practicalities, but anybody got anything they want to ask or contribute at this stage about one? Is anybody else running one-day events like this involving children? So what kind of things are you doing, Alison? What about Halloween parties? What about Sarah? Are you running stuff?
Yeah, we started. We have a cafe, and the local community project worker for the council estate it's in asked if we would help her run occasional parties for social benefit to keep the crime levels down at Halloween. So we started that way, and actually it worked. The crime was right down. But then her funding went, and I was frustrated. I wanted to do more. I felt we were quite limited. There was value in doing that for social good, but we wanted to be able to talk freely about the gospel. We didn't really good.
Yeah.
So we now do two family fun days and one hunter barbecue a year. And I agree with you about not stretching people, because my big concern is we're a smallish church and lots of things happening, and I want people to do well.
Yeah.
But the family fun day, again, we really wrestled with how to get the gospel in there, and went for the having a theme and trying to get everybody running their little area to actually have a try and get people talking about, just from the basic element, like
yeah.
where did colour come from, you know, if you're doing spring and you're talking about colours and or, you know, appreciation of different textures, just basically, because people, I don't think, even think that far. And then people were primed to try and take that as far as they could.
Yeah.
And build relationships.
Anybody else got some different ideas? For
well, it's not my idea. My mates in America, and their church, on a Saturday, one Saturday a month, between 5 and 9 in the evening, the teenagers have, like, the parents drop the kids off, and the teenagers, under their supervision with their youth leaders, look after the kids, they feed them, they play games with them, so the parents can go off and have a date night. And it is well popular, and they pay a small fee. Teenagers raise money for their youth weekends away. Parents are happy because they're on a night out. So it's a good way of, you know.
Yeah. It's good. Anyone else?
Do that at Valentine's, couldn't you?
Yeah. You could. not exhausting your church. I think, you know, you've raised that again. I can't stress that too highly. Tamar is from a monster church where you've got lots of people, but still you can knacker and ruin people. And you want to be able to be consistent in the program. So planning stuff and seeing the reason for everything you do rather than just flying at it and creating all kinds of things and carefully thinking about your resources, the chief of which, of course, is people. And recruiting and getting people to be involved. Now, the great thing about one-off events is that you can recruit people who might not have the energy strength because of, you know, they have demanding jobs or whatever, people who aren't free for Sunday clubs or midweek evening clubs or whatever. So one of the great things about my Christmas fun event is that I recruit lots of older people, some of the 60 and 70-year-olds, come and help with it because they feel they've got something to contribute and can do when it's just the day for 3 hours, whereas they couldn't commit themselves to, you know, being running a Sunday school every week. But you need to recruit people. Be aware to look outside your current hot favourites. It's a rule in church life, isn't it? You always ask the busiest person if you want to get something done. But, you know, that's a good way to kill them as well. People need training, and I think this is really important because obviously you're not just, you need people there, you know, on a statutory basis. If you've got kids involved, you know, if you've got kids under three, what's the rule of thumb you gave to me last November, Alison? One adult to three children if the children are under three. If they're under sort of 11,
one to eight,
that's the kind of rule of thumb you need to work to. So just, you know, if you're expecting to get 80 kids, you know, you need at least 10 or a dozen, or actually probably 20 helpers to, with all the sorting out, to, if you're running something which has got lots of activities involved with it. And they need some rudimentary training. We don't have time to do some formal training. I know Tamar is very committed to this and does significant training with her team before one of these days. Is that right?
Not loads of corporate days, but I do a lot of formal training groups. And a lot of people involved.
The three things I train my one-off volunteers in are safety as paramount, just about awareness of, you know, keeping kids safe. The other thing is about sex, which is the usual thing I say to all the youth leaders, which is, you know, if you're taking a kid to the toilet, here are the rules. You know, you don't go in with them, you stand outside with the door open, preferably you in view of someone else. You know, never alone with a child in the same way. You know, we have to be clear about that for the safety of the adult, actually, as much as for the safety of the child. You know, you may get someone in your team who has problems in that area. You've got to be you know, you've got to set it up so that they don't have the opportunity themselves. And likewise, you've got to set it up and underline for them the realities of that thing so that there isn't some horrific false accusation which can ruin your ministry, your church, and the life of the individual concerned. So, and it happens. It happens. So I'm very clear about that to make sure that that's underlined. And the last thing I train people in is how to, discipline-wise, how to make sure children listen to a talk. This was something that I learned the hard way when I put on my first big Christmas fun and it had all been sort of getting ready and I was doing the talk and the kids would have listened except the leaders were doing all the wrong things around the edge. They weren't listening. They were looking elsewhere. They weren't watching the kids and seeing who was fighting and sort of sitting in between them. They weren't focused on me so that the kids would also focus on me. So I literally do sort of 20 minutes on those three subjects before the session starts and then pray with the leaders. But if you have an opportunity to do more training, then I would aim it at the area of asking, you know, what are you there for? You're there, of course, to make it safe. You're there to make it run smoothly. You're there to help them do the things. But you're there to talk to them and to reinforce the message. And, you know, when you're doing the craft about Easter, you're there to, you know, ask them, what is this Christingle all about then? And get them to repeat back to you what, you know, do you know what a Christingle is? I only just discovered that this last couple of years. It's very old. Is that what?
It just says you do it Easter.
Easter. Well, this was a Christmas one, you know. But to repeat the message to them so that they're hearing, you know, they're young children. They need repetition is the way it works, isn't it, with young children? Repetition. You've got to get them organised into teams. I tend to split up. I'm not a very good administrator. I do these days in partnership with a woman who's a brilliant administrator. I think up the ideas and do the teaching bit. She organises everybody else, and it's a great partnership that works. But you need to be aware of what your skills are. And, you know, the body of Christ is about working together to do the work of the ministry of the word, isn't it? And different parts, different responsibilities, etc., etc. Don't be a one-man band, because God never intended you to be a one-man band. We do it all together, don't we? So if you're rubbish at admin, find someone to do the admin with. If you're not very good at doing talks, you do the admin and get them to do the talks. That's fine. That's the way it should work. Numbers we've talked about. Publicity, very important. Here are two pieces of publicity. One of them, the top one is mine, done for this last year's Christmas fun. There's Derek and Daisy, the cow who did the cow and the sheep who did the... And because Wimbledon is a very kind of formal kind of area, I designed it as something which was actually quite a bit stiff and formal, because that's the kind of thing that would work with the parents in the area. The one at the bottom is Tamar's Lightbusters. What was that for? Was that a Halloween thing? That's their alternative Halloween thing, which is a bit more, you know, garish and flash. And you thought mine was rubbish, didn't you?
I thought it was boring.
Yeah. But that's okay. I can handle that. But again, publicity, what works for your area? And, you know, have a look at what's around. Have a look how people are advertising things. But what you need to make sure on the publicity is, you know, who is it going to, and therefore let's make it attractive to them. Very clear on the details. When does it start? When does it finish? Where is it? The number of times I see church publicity things that you actually couldn't tell what it is, where it was, when it started, when it finished. Parents, particularly of young children, need to know these things in minute and pathetically obsessive detail. What?
I once printed 200 Holiday Bible Club invitations and left the time off and had to hand
Well, that's a great idea. Yes, Sarah, email it in to me, and I'll email it to everybody with a note about it. Because no, it's absolutely right, you know. And the gospel depends on it. You know, if you get that wrong, you won't get the people to your event. They won't hear the gospel. Here's the other thing I'm very strong on. It's got to be clear on what the Christian content is. Our church ran another quiz night, which was kind of preparatory to A Passion for Life. And the expectation was wrong. So we invited these friends of ours that we'd been cultivating for a while, two sets of friends, expecting it to be a kind of level two event. And it turned out to be level three. And, you know, we were expecting a warm 5-minute, here are the questions, Passion for Life at Easter, running some special events, why don't you come along to that? And they got a 25-minute complicated sermon with a prayer at the end, and we were dying. Be very clear what the Christian content is. You know, it's in the Lord's hands, and, you know, you've got to shrug your shoulders about it, but it was awful at the time. And the organisers copped a lot of flack from the gobby Christians afterwards, so I don't think they're going to be making that mistake again. But make it clear, because you don't want to do bait and switch, do you? You know, this is, you know what bait and switch is? You offer someone a really flashy product, say, come in and buy it, and then you take it away and you put a really crappy thing on. It's like what they do in January sales, you know. They've taken all the nice stuff out and filled it with all the sort of cheap rubbish, and they do it on a sale. So, you know, you're not getting anything for nothing in it. And it's cheating. It's dishonest. And the last thing you want is parents coming to something which is advertised as a fun day for all the family, and then there's a Christian bit, and they go, oh, well, we didn't sign up for that. So it's got to be clear what it is. 10-minute talk from Cardiff's best youth worker, Tamar Pollard, on what it means to be forgiven. You know, something like, it's just got to say it so that people know what they're on for. Not jargony. We're rubbish at doing that, aren't we? Putting jargon words in things. And out in good time. Again, depends on the area you're in, to be honest. In my kind of area, it has to be out 3 months beforehand. Or on the way 3 months beforehand. In some kind of areas, it's pointless doing that because people don't have diaries, and they have to be handed the invitation the night before, and they go, "All right, yeah, we do that. We're not doing anything tomorrow." And you know, they roll up in their thousands. But again, it depends, not in good time, but in the right time. Another thing that we, you know, welcome James. We say we believe in it, but we fail to actually put our money where our mouth is. You know, if it's God's work in drawing people, which it is, then we need to be on our knees for these events, that God would move someone from being a fringer to an occasional dipper in, that God would take someone who's dipped in to really start asking questions about the gospel. So it's utterly, utterly vital. So plan to pray for your event, or it will not happen. It's as simple as that, isn't it? When you're putting the plans together, okay, how are we going to pray properly for this? I've got a string of half a dozen dear ladies who I have parceled up the pictures of the children, regular children in Sunday school, sent them out to them. I know these children get prayed for every week by these great warrior souls, and similarly, I plan a way that these events will be covered in prayer with the team. And if I'm running a training event beforehand, I'll make prayer a big part of the evening. Plan for it; it won't happen. Plan prayer, little prayer for sort. Admin. It's the sort of despised cousin, isn't it, of the spiritual gifts? But it's there in the list. It's a gift of the spirit to be an administrator. I'm more and more convinced as time goes by that admin, although it's very often invisible, is one of the biggest factors in anything running successfully and in the hearing of the gospel. So if you're no good at it, get someone in. It's utterly vital. You need all those kind of things like permission slips, permission forms. If you've got food there, you've got to have that stuff about, you know, is your child nut allergic? Health issues for you know, if you've got kids for a whole day, you need to have someone around who can handle an EpiPen if one of the kids has, you know, got one of those things going with it. By law, I think you're supposed to have an incident under or a health book, aren't you, in church and on site? This is stuff that bewilders and mystifies me, but I do it. And also administrating the follow-up. Tamar talked about having a database. How many of you have actually got a database of, quite a lot of you, of contacts for your church? Yeah. Hello? Go on. Yeah. Yeah.
But I rang them up and asked them, and they said if it's with kind of within the church use, yes, you can't give
them. The Data Protection Act is about not giving it to anyone else or making it accessible to anyone else unless that you have the permission of the people. Yeah.
It's only allowed on one computer as well,
oh, yes,
for up to 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, but record keeping and keeping them up to date is, you know, it is a big issue too. But when you've got a system in place, you can mine it and use it for the glory of God. And of course, CRB issues. You don't technically need CRBs for one day events, criminal records checks. You have to have, is there a self-certifying thing that you use, Tamar?
Yeah, I guess a lot of you are with CCPS, and they advised us that as long as all volunteers for one-off are just a self-declaration form,
yeah,
that is enough to cover. Your regular workers should be CRBs, but we do one-offs self-declaration.
Hmm. And, you know, pray God that none of this is needed, but it has to be there to reassure parents. Parents live in paranoia land. They don't know you. You look a bit weird. What am I doing leaving my kids with these people? And if you've got all this stuff nailed, it is a big, big reassurance to parents. They breathe a huge sigh of relief. It makes you at least look like you know what you're doing, even if you don't, even if you're bluffing it, like I guess a lot of us are. I've talked about that. Long-term, low-key, relational. We need to finish. Tamar has written a book called One Day Wonders, which is where the title of this seminar came from. I think this will be coming out later this year, where she talks about a lot of the issues of setting stuff up and the admin side and the theory and the theology behind it. But also has some great ideas. The bulk of the book is great ideas for running one-off events. So I hope you don't feel like this has just been a cheap sell. It's not. The information's for free, but there'll be stuff to dig into in that. I think we're out of time. Any questions people would like to ask? Can I encourage you just to think those things through? They're really valuable in feeding and developing gospel work amongst children and parents. Anyone like to make a statement? Ask a question? Yes.
I'm just wondering about ideas for drawing health
Tamar, do you want to suggest some ideas that you've done?
I kind of touched on some of them before. I guess family treasure is a brilliant way of doing it around the locality, and we end up at the church for chips. And we, I told you, we're all food based. And we put a team member, a church member, with the family. So they're chatting to the family as they walk around as well. So that's just a simple one. At the end of activity days, we've done quite a bit of family, like you talked about before, family fun nights. I think getting kids performing is a great way to get parents in. So one club has got coming up in a couple of weeks, a talent show and a meal. We do a three-course meal. The kids who don't want to be in the talent show are waiters and waitresses, which they love, and their parents will come and watch them do that. So that's another way. We've got a pancake party coming up for the younger kids. And we're doing lots of going around games, toast and into pancakes, and just eat pancakes. Food game. I try and make sure there's a lot of events where we have the families as part of.
Good, thank you for listening. And God bless you. Enjoy supper. To be cautious about using your resources.
Yeah. July for the sports hall at West House School.
That was a bit irritating.
Are these all going in black bags?
That's those two from that one.
How is Brian? Yeah, how's he used to be for ages? Is he still doing stuff for BCM?
Oh, yeah. He's running a Sunday service, Sunday afternoon. He runs a service, I think, twice a month for homeless men.
Oh, yeah. I think a few guys from Wood Green go and help them with that.
Yes.
Last time I saw him,
Brian.
Big church.